W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington with an investigation now in the hands of a special counsel for the Justice Department. The White House is about as mum as it can be on the discovery of more sensitive Obama-era documents in President Biden's Delaware House and a former civilian office that he used in Washington.
How do you think that the classified documents got into your boxes?
The president ignored questions about the disclosure of five more classified pages at his Wilmington home as the demand for answers from the White House from both parties increased.
We have a serious trust issue.
In a letter, House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer told White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain the White House must provide the Wilmington residents' visitor log. But a White House spokesman told CBS News there's no such thing. Like every president across decades of modern history, his personal residence is personal.
Correspondent Adriana Diaz continuing to cover a story she broke last week. There has been an arrest in that Albuquerque, New Mexico series of shootings at local politicians' homes.
Solomon Pena, 39-year-old, former House representative candidate, hoping to represent a district of Albuquerque. He lost in the election to Miguel Garcia, now being arrested, facing charges, accused of essentially conspiring with four other men to shoot at the homes of Albuquerque area elected officials.
KRQE-TV reporter Chris McKee. And we have a late word from Florida, where the St. Lucie County Sheriff's Office confirms a mass shooting. Eight people shot, one of them in critical condition. All around the country, there have been commemorations of the birthday of a civil rights icon.
Here at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial in Washington, D.C., people have been coming all day to take photos and reflect on what the civil rights leader means to them.
It's just like a sense of like oneness, I guess, for me, and unity to see so many people here at the same time.
That is CBS's Nicole D'Antonio reporting. For California, relief from weeks of rain is now in sight, even if not quite here yet. But at the moment, there are still big water cause problems. Take Sierra Madre, California. Many there without power, asked to shelter in place after a massive pine tree was uprooted, crashed down.
Got up at about 5:30 in the morning, was watching TV, and then all of a sudden there was a huge spark that I saw that lit up the sky right outside of our deck. And the next thing I know, the power went out.
Sierra Madre, California police say that power should be back within about 24 to 48 hours. In Ukraine, President Vladimir Zelensky says almost 40 people, including six children, have been rescued from the rubble of a residential block in the city of Dnipro after Russian missiles hit it on Saturday. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Police say at least three people are dead just across the Illinois border in Rockford. One of the victims is a teenage boy. Rockford police tell local TV five people in all were hit in a rash of shootings last night. Three people were killed. Two victims got themselves to the hospital. Last we knew, police couldn't say whether the shootings were connected. Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebrations are going on all over Wisconsin today. The oldest official state celebration is at the State Capitol Rotunda in Madison. Milwaukee's annual King Day celebration is at the Marcus Performing Arts Center. There are also events from Kenosha to Eau Claire and La Crosse to Wausau. All events are free and open to the public. In sports, the Bucks host Indiana this afternoon. Tampa Bay hosts Dallas in the NFL playoffs tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Hump Day equals Hump Day. Greg Bach Day.
It is. It is. Put that on your tombstone.
Oh, yeah.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Yes, you've just convinced me towards a burial service now. That's it.
Wait, was it cremation before? Was that your go-to?
Viking funeral?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
RickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this summer is going to be interesting in that, as I've been saying, the Teamsters have an opportunity. The new president, Sean O'Brien, has an opportunity to really transform the future of work in this country. This UPS contract, if done right, can be transformative, can reclaim that bit of the working class. And I go back to my grandparents. My grandfather fought for the National Master Freight Agreement. That single agreement took truck drivers out of being poverty wage jobs and moved them solidly into the upper echelon of the working class. This contract can do just that, not just for the handful of UPSers, but for all of them. This can be transformational across the package industry. That's how big this can be. And that's why I've asked Richard Hooker to come talk with us. Richard's the Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters Local 623 out here in Philadelphia. He represents one of the bigger UPS facilities. Richard, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, brother. Always a pleasure.
So before we get into this, I wanted to get your thoughts. Today being Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, we celebrate the day. I wanted to get your thoughts on today and what it means to you.
Well, to me, it means so very much. For what he stood for, the sacrifices that he made. I wouldn't be in the position that I am in today if it wasn't for him and others like him to fight for all working people, but especially for, you know, African Americans and minorities. You know, the sacrifices that he made, it was just a profound man, and for what he has done and what his legacy continues to do and what it, you know, brings forth even today. So I'm forever in his debt. Again, if it wasn't for brothers like Martin Luther King, there would be no Richard Hooker Jr., the first African-American principal officer of Teamsters Local 623.
No, and what people don't maybe not realize is that he was in Memphis to support striking workers, because that was a core tenet of his belief structure, that economic power, that reward for work, that ability to support oneself through their labor.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said that. I mean, he was there to support working people, working families. He didn't have to do that, but he wanted to do that. He felt that it was necessary because civil rights and workers' rights are the same. Better working conditions, safer communities, livable wages, you know, a voice in a workplace, a voice in the community. Those things are the same. So, again, for what he's done and what he did, it's just an honor to be able to celebrate him today.
Yeah. Now, to honor that legacy is to move it forward. And I've said this UPS contract that's coming up over the summer. Am I being hyperbolic to say that this can be transformative? This can, you know, reinvigorate work, can remold the working class and what work in this country is. Is that a bit hyperbolic, do you think?
It's perfect. I think what you said is perfect, and it's right on the head. What we can do with this contract can really set the stage for future generations. It's not about right now, but for our kids and grandkids and their kids and their grandkids, right? This contract can go a long way with organizing Amazon, Walmart, and those type of companies who are brutal as well. So this can really be a springboard into the lifeblood, which is organizing for the Teamsters. And I'm hoping and praying that we do get the deal that our members so desperately demand and deserve, especially after what happened with the COVID. I think when you throw that in there,
yeah,
workers are not willing to just wait. They're really to get down and dirty and fight this company. And that's what it's going to take to win.
No. And this is what I've been saying. I think Sean O'Brien is the right guy in the right moment, because I haven't seen the kind of energy that I see with Teamster members that I talk to across the country, whether it's in Chicago or Minneapolis or wherever. I haven't seen this kind of energy to take on and fight for something that we're seeing right now. I just haven't seen it. So this could be that moment, if used properly, that can be transformative, of making this contract fair across the board and then using it to, like you said, go out and organize Amazon, go out and organize FedEx, to bring people into this, to make this industry not one of poverty and desperation and gig economy kind of work, but actual life employment, good wage employment.
Absolutely. And when you look at UPS's motto, they exploit the low-wage part-time workers. It's 350,000 UPS Teamsters. 230 to 240 of those UPS Teamsters are part-time, low-wage workers. And there's a group of those workers who are, they're not waiting around for the leadership, they're not waiting around for management, they're not waiting around for someone to come save them. They're mobilizing themselves because they are tired and fed up of either the inability from the leadership and the bullish nature of the company. So they're taking these demands in their own hands, and I applaud them for that. And yeah, and I think all of us need to get behind them, because again, they make up about 66% to 70% of UPS's workforce.
Now you brought up the pandemic here a second ago, which I find, you know, really important to understand the moment that we're in. We called those part-timers essential frontline heroes. We patted them on the back, and UPS, to bring them in the door, to entice them to come to work, gave them a higher wage, which, you know, in this area where I'm at was like $24 an hour. And then on a Friday decided, you know what, we're going to claw that back, and literally took like $10 an hour from them. I mean, that kind of indignity, that can't sit well.
It hasn't. And I think when you add the pandemic and what they did to the wages, just taking it from them like that, in some areas without notice, I know here in Philly, they didn't even tell them. They just took it. Now, I reached out to the city, and because, as you all know, that, you know, that's wage theft. You have to let the workers know when you're taking their pay. And yep, they didn't do that. So we took it to the city, and we were able to get out those workers over $32,000 in back wages. But UPS doesn't care. That's just a check. I mean, they'll just write that off. But I don't think they're going to be able to write this movement off. Come August 1st, if there's no deal, they're not going to be able to write anything off. They're going to understand that what they did in the pandemic, what they did to those part-timers for taking those wages, they're going to have to pay for that. They're going to have to pay for that.
Now, do you foresee there possibly being a strike? I've had both sides. I've had people say absolutely going to happen. I've had people say absolutely not going to happen. Or don't we know yet?
I will say this. It's dependent on the company. I think our members, they've had enough. The pandemic, no hazard pay, no dignity, no respect. I think that pushed them over the edge. And I think when you really sit down and talk to a lot of the members, they are willing to do whatever it takes to get that respect and dignity back. It's like you said, it's not about the wages anymore. It's about that respect, that dignity, because UPS, the management, they talk to the workers any kind of way, treat them any kind of way. And again, I hate to keep doing the pandemic in there, but that pandemic really pushed workers to the edge. When you make as much money as UPS has made during the pandemic, you treat your workers like nothing. They're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
And they're willing to do whatever it takes.
No, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Richard Hooker Jr. He's Secretary, Treasurer, and Principal Officer of Teamsters Local 623 in Philadelphia. They represent one of the largest UPS facilities in the area. Now, you come back to how wealthy UPS is. I saw a story. They're buying back something like $2 billion worth of their stock. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. They have so much profit right now because of the pandemic, because of, people are not going to the stores anymore. They're ordering online. They feel safer at home, and it puts a pressure on our members to deliver. I want the public to really understand this, if I can. There's nothing that you can go to the store and get that UPS makes. They don't manufacture anything. They don't make anything. They don't build anything. Everything that they have is because of the Teamsters. Everything. So I want every member to understand that and the public to understand that, because UPS doesn't do anything without the members. Nothing at all. They don't make anything. There's no profit. So all this money they have, it's off the backs of our sisters and brothers. And depending on what they do, we go a long way come August 1st.
Yeah. No, the reason I bring up the stock buybacks is, that should be money that's distributed amongst the workforce. That was the $10 an hour they stole from those part-timers for every hour they work. That's the wages that they've taken and the benefits that they've taken over the years. That should be going back into the workforce, not going to make the CEO wealthier and the shareholders wealthier. That's my point. And the other part of this is, it's not just the economics, it's the treatment. You've alluded to this a couple of times. It's that respect. When I get people emailing me about what's going on at UPS, it's the treatment of management. It's the constant surveillance that goes on every minute of every day. And they need help. They need time off.
Yes.
Those seem to be the big three issues. Monetarily, well down the list, but those seem to be the big three. Am I getting this right?
You're getting it right. In the last contract, language was added to try to help our members when it comes to this harassment, right? But it didn't have enough teeth in it. It just says that it could be a monetary penalty. When you deal with a company like UPS, you have to have teeth with your language. You just can't say certain things. There has to be some type of pushback, some fight. So what I'm hoping is that we give our members that the teeth that they're looking for. So when your management is retaliating, harassing, it's not going to be a slap on the wrist, or it could be this or it could be that. We need definite language that says, if you do this to our members, this is what's going to happen to you, to stop this from happening. Because I shouldn't come to work, be harassed, be retaliated against because you don't like me, or because I don't work fast enough, or because you just have a problem with me. I come to work to do a job. I don't come to work to get harassed.
Yeah.
That's not what this is about. But UPS is notoriously getting away with this, and our members are tired of it.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because the big elephant in the room is Amazon. As we speak, they're ramping up a delivery service to be competitive, I guess, with UPS. Is this something we're concerned about? And is there a plan in place to try and figure out how we organize those workers, how we deal with that? I'm curious if something's going on there that we should know about.
Well, I know the international, they have a whole new division for Amazon now. And I think that, this UPS contract will go a long way with organizing Amazon, because they do the same work, the same type of work. And when you look at the workers there and our members, same type of members, this is a great opportunity for them to for all of us to come together. I know in Philly, we actually are working together privately around this contract, and bring them in, and we can help them, they can help us. because what we're trying to do here is to show these employers that we're all coming together, non-union Amazon and union UPS. We're going to fight both of them together, right? And I know we're going to win together. So there is some things in place. I know we're doing some stuff here locally, and I know the international has a whole new department that's led by a gentleman, a brother named Randy Corrigan. And so I know they're trying to do some things, and there's more Amazon workers than there are total Teamsters. So that's going to be an uphill battle, but I think we can do it, and I know we will.
Yeah, no, Randy's a good friend of the show. In fact, we just had him on last Monday talking about Amazon, because this is an important thing and something that has to be done. And then for me, the reason I keep coming back to this contract potentially being transformative is that this can be an industry-wide, not just in UPS-specific, but an industry-wide contract to cover package delivery drivers across the board, no matter what uniform you're wearing. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, just like I know, unions raise the wages. This contract will raise standards, wages, working conditions, quality of life, health, pension, all these things. So a lot is riding on this contract.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm glad that we started early. We actually here at 6:23, we sit down with our supplement negotiations on February the 10th. So we've been meeting with our rank and file committee, with our executive board, with our legal counsel to make sure that we get the best supplement that we've ever had, because that's what our members demand and deserve.
Yeah, right there with you. I hope you'll come back and share more with us down the road as this continues, because this, again, this summer is going to be really interesting. The UPS contract, the freight contract's up on the Teamster side, the UAW's contract's up. A lot of big opportunities for working people to see lives get better. I wish you guys the best. And again, I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Absolutely. Have me on anytime. Thank you so much.
Good stuff. Richard Hooker Jr. Appreciate the time. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickSmithShow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickSmithShow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, speaking of CEO pay and stock buybacks and all of that, in 2021, the 7 top U.S. health insurance CEOs, they raked in $283 million. Aren't you glad to know that our healthcare CEOs are well taken care of? Aren't you happy to know that those seven people have taken so many dollars out of the healthcare system to kind of line their pocket? And if you think that's bad, between 2012 and 2021, CEOs of the top 14 drug companies, $747 billion in stock buybacks and dividends. Let me repeat that. $747 billion they spent on stock buybacks and dividends. Big Pharma spent $660 billion on research and development for the new drugs. They spent more money giving to rich people and buying back their stocks than they spent on research and development. Now, understand, we give them all these tax breaks because we're told they need the money. They know what to do with it. They're smart. They're going to invest it. They're going to use it better than the government could. Look, I got to tell you, if it's me, I think, you know, just digging a ditch and burning it is better than just allowing these companies to be able to buy back their shares and hand it off to CEOs and rich people. Sorry. We were told that that money was going to go to, you know, cancer research and new drugs and, you know, things to make us better and healthier, not make a handful richer. And this is where Bernie Sanders, who is now the chairman of the HELP Committee, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee in the Senate, has pointed out that, you know, we spend $13,000 for every man, woman, and child for health care. About 20% of our GDP goes to health care. And yet we have 85 million Americans who are either uninsured or underinsured. We have worse health outcomes, lower life expectancies, higher infant mortality rates than any industrialized nations in the world. We've got all these negative, but we spend the most. We're making, these companies are making huge profits. And yet we still have a 500,000 people who declare bankruptcy every year because of medical debt. Tens of thousands of people die needlessly because they can't afford to get the care that they need when they need it. And yet, we've got the best health care in the world because it's evidently the most expensive. Reality is 1 in 4 Americans can't afford the medicine that their doctor prescribes to them. You got seniors, and this is not new. You got seniors who ration their pills, cut them in half, don't do the testing, don't do the things that they need to do. And yet things get worse. And the rich are getting richer and richer and richer. And well, the working class of this country, the 60% of us that live hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, we're continually struggling. And yet we're talking about stoves. And this is where I look at this contract at UPS. There's an opportunity here. Because those UPS part-timers, they get health care. Those Amazon workers, they don't. Those delivery drivers, they're gig workers. And you know what Amazon's going to right now? I just had someone explain, you know, what the future of Amazon delivery is. You can be, you know, like how you go to the grocery store and you get to be a part-time checkout person because you get to do it yourself. You can now be a delivery driver for Amazon, just like an Uber driver. On your way home from work, you can swing by, pick up a couple of packages and drop them off on the way home. That's the future. That's the future of what Amazon sees. Everyone is going to be a delivery person. Everybody. And you know what happens? Nobody has any money to buy anything, because they're paying poverty wages. And this is why, again, I look at this UPS contract as an opportunity to set a floor across the industry to start saying, look, this is what we should be doing. This is the road we should be taking. This is the path. Whether you work for the Postal Service, whether you work for Amazon, FedEx, UPS, that's the floor. Instead of this continual race to the bottom, because look, these companies are wildly profitable because of the labor that their employees partake in. And Richard Hooker's right. UPS doesn't make anything. They don't manufacture anything. They don't produce anything. Every bit of profit that they bring in is because of the men and women who sort those packages, who load those packages, who deliver those packages, and the customer service. Every one of those dollars that was made in profit was because of them. not because of the CEO, not because of the shareholders and how smart they are, but because of the working people. And this is where, again, return reward to work. It's my thought. Love to hear yours. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. House Republicans want much more White House information about the handling of sensitive government documents found at President Biden's Delaware residence and a Washington office. Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
I think there's a lot of questions that continue to raise, and we want to get all the information possible.
One bit of information the White House says is not possible, visitor logs for the president's private home. They supposedly don't exist. Albuquerque, New Mexico officials say a former state House candidate who lost his election bid conspired to shoot at four lawmakers' homes, Mayor Tim Keller.
The shootings were orchestrated. They were dangerous attacks, not only to these individuals, which is personally the most terrifying for them, but fundamentally also to democracy. That is why this is so terrible.
Ukraine reports at least 40 people, including three children, killed in a Russian attack on an apartment building in Dnipro.
A makeshift memorial was quickly created. Irina Skripnik lights a candle and sobs.
Correspondent Deborah Pata in Ukraine. CBS News Brief. I'm Tom Foti.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. Supporters of ranked choice voting say it's the future of democracy. Over 60 jurisdictions in the country have some form of ranked choice voting, which allows voters to put candidates in order of choice instead of voting for a single person. Green Party co-chair Dave Schwab tells Wisconsin Public Radio that ranked choice would also boost third party and independent candidates. A bipartisan group of state lawmakers introduced legislation 2 years ago to make Wisconsin a ranked choice voting state, but it lacked enough support to become law. Packers linebacker Quay Walker fined just over $13,000 by the NFL this weekend for shoving a Detroit Lions trainer during the season finale. A penalty called on Walker set up the Lions' game-winning touchdown. He was also ejected from the game. Walker has apologized. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
We stand on the shoulders of women who came before us.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn.
Join us. Visit WeSaySaveIt.org and take control of your financial future by saving for retirement.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Rewilding your yard with things like prairie grass. For help, go to rewild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this George Santos saga is getting more interesting by the day. Evidently, back in 2020, he did a podcast said, I put myself through college, got an MBA from NYU, and I have zero debt. He said, I hate looking at youth today and seeing them sitting on their behinds and acting like, ugh, this is so hard. Never mind the fact he never graduated from NYU. In fact, any college or university. But hey, what's a fact when you got a good story to tell? Wow. I mean, it just gets more interesting as the day goes longer. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the fun and entertainment we are seeing in Congress on the Santos saga. I've asked my good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think? You went to NYU, NBA, no debt, but never actually went there.
You know, I was in the hot box, and you know, so I know how that is. But I had friends, people who knew me, et cetera, you know. And with Santos's case, you know, he comes into Congress, and not only does he not have friends, he doesn't make friends.
Yeah.
Everything I'm hearing from friends up on Capitol Hill, Rick, tell me that, and this is coming from Republicans. They tell me that, you know, he came in, he wasn't remorseful, he was, you know, arrogant, continuing to say things everybody knows is not true. And so, I mean, I think he's doomed at some particular time. Of course, the speaker can't say much because he's a vote until he goes. And now he's got this link to the cousin of a sanctioned Russian oligarch. Then he has two roommates that said I don't know what a blueberry must be. I'm not a fashion person, and I know you aren't either. But something that's blueberry scarf, it must be valuable or something.
Yeah, I guess he stole some blueberry scarf and wore it.
I don't know, some blueberry thing must be valuable, and he sold some scarves. The roommate said, I mean, it just never quits with this guy.
Yeah, ever. You know, again, you know, the sad reality is this is what you get when. I don't know. I do find it interesting that Kevin McCarthy did say he had some questions about Santos. He always had a few questions. That's his position now.
Right. Well, that's because they're saying that a lot of the leaders knew that he had falsification, you know, on his resume and his background. That's what they're saying. And that's what they're, you know, some people are trying to find out who knew what, you know, and when to it.
So now let me ask you this.
But I imagine at some time, you know, he's going to have to go. Now, one thing I will note to you, though, one of the Republicans said that, you know, if in fact he violated campaign finance laws, you know, he's gone. Well, let me correct that for a second, because people violate campaign finance laws all the time. So that statement about, well, if he violates campaign finance, he's gone, is just an attempt to say, you know, that's how we're going to get him.
Yeah, that's
but
how we're going to get him.
That's not necessarily the case, because if they try to expel him based on campaign finance laws, I mean, people violate them quite regular.
Yeah, all the time. No, you're
all the time.
Yeah, but you know, here's the weird thing. You brought up the links to this sanctioned Russian oligarch. There's a lot of people now who, you know, I've gotten a bunch of email on this going, is he a Russian asset? Or is he a Russian plant? And this is kind of spinning. I'm not conspiratorial, but it seems odd that he was able to make it through an entire election cycle. And really this didn't come to anyone's, I don't know. It was able to be held tapped down. It just seems odd to me.
Well, there's also some strange things when it comes to his income. Because he went from you know, extremely small income to an unexplained larger income, and I mean unexplained. And he said, "Well, I have a company that I consult, but I don't think he particularly had, you know, particularly a list of clients who paid him X amount." But then he had this link, and it's deeper ties than originally was thought, and this businessman cultivated close ties at one time with, a Trump confidant, and he's the cousin of a sanctioned oligarch. So you start to look at all of this and you wonder, okay, You know, where does this go to?
Yeah, it seems like all roads are leading back to Moscow and Russia. And again, I know my friends on the right go, it's all a hoax. But when all arrows are pointing in a certain direction, I don't know. Thoughts?
Well, I think there's two countries above all. And, I mean, everybody loves to talk about Iran because, you know, because it's Iran and the leaders of Iran. But when you want to look at infiltration, you want to look at manipulation and, you know, downright potential espionage, et cetera, just look at Russia and China. I mean, those are the two that you can point to. And we've had case after case, including, you know, analysts who came here from China that were involved with espionage, electronic espionage. But also, in particular, Russia seems to be sort of, you know, China goes after kind of the secrets. Russia goes after the infiltration of people, you know, to get people into positions and get close to them.
So, I'm not jumping on the conspiratorial bandwagon, but is it possible that this is a plant?
I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, in the SEC filing, it was called the Interter, put thousands of dollars into Santos's one-time employer, which was Harbor City, and they were accused of running a Ponzi scheme, and money went into there. And so they're thinking that came in particular, you know, between Santos and the ties and the, you know, cousin of the oligarch. So, you know, now this guy's now a U.S. citizen and has an investment firm, but has extensive ties to one of the interests of his Russian cousins, who, again, was a sanctioned oligarch named Veckelsberg.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't write this stuff up. Netflix wouldn't pick up this show.
I always say that. I was telling somebody yesterday, I do your show, and I was telling them that tune into your show, and I said, you know, we talk about if we went to some big movie producer and if we started with, in 2016, we're going to have Trump come down the escalator, they'd say, get out of here, you two. Yeah, you're crazy.
And let's take the next step, the next bit of this play. The RNC is looking at a leadership fight coming up, and the pillow guy, I guess, is still in it. Would it not be the greatest chapter if the pillow guy was the head of the RNC?
For the Democratic side, yes.
I mean, no. Just for me, I want this. I don't ask for much.
It would be entertaining. Much. Yes. Right, it would be entertaining.
The comedy of this would be fantastic.
Well, it would be destructive for the Republican National Committee, of course.
Well, of course, but it would still be funny.
Right. Well, you know, they had, there's a fight for it, you know, internally. And, of course, when there's a Republican president, they particularly pick who's going to be there. And the Democratic side, the same thing. They have a lot of influence, but... you know, right now there's a big battle for it.
Yeah, it's a three-way shot between Rona McDaniel, who's been there for since 2016, and this lawyer from California, this Harmeet Dhillon, who's an election lawyer from California, and the MyPillow guy.
Right.
I'm pulling for the MyPillow guy.
Well, you know, there's been this battle so far, as you said, between McDaniel and who's, you know, kind of a tough to beat incumbent, been there. She's got institutional support. And then Dhillon, who's considered, you know, he's got a lot of grassroots support, even though it's a bit of an uphill battle. But when you do throw the pillow guy in, if he takes some votes, you know, he could be the kind of the kingmaker.
He could be the sleeper.
You really? Okay, I got it. Oh, there'd be too many jokes. There'd be too many. And, you know, he's so out there.
Oh, he's crazy.
I don't know how his business survived.
I have no idea. There's got to be Russian money going there because I don't know. I know people who have had his pillows, and they all tell me they're terrible. You know, I've known people who have pitched them, and they give them to you to use for a while, and they all give them back. I have no experience. I've just what people have told me, and I don't, because they're expensive too. It's not like they're cheap, mm-hmm. which is weird.
And you know, the interesting thing, by the way, about Dylan, she's an Indian-born immigrant and became active, I think, in the 2000s, you know, in the Republican Party. And so that's kind of interesting. I mean, if she would win the head of the party.
It would be interesting to see how that, if that were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I think Rona McDaniel's going to get it because...
Probably.
But it's always fun to want. I wanted to get your thought on impeachment watch because I'm counting down the days until Republicans shoot themselves in the foot with a sham impeachment. Are you looking at the clock like I am?
Well, I can predict you what the first impeachment talk round is going to be, of course.
That's going to be classified documents.
Hunter Biden, it's going to be... I got to not laugh when I say this, but anyway, it's going to be the classified documents, because it doesn't matter that the other guy had them.
Nope.
It's this guy having them. If they go after the president for those documents, then they're foolish. Look, no doubt about it. I don't care the difference between Trump and Biden. Now with Biden having these documents, three rounds of them, I know they're less. I know the differences, but it doesn't matter. This makes it a political wash. This makes Garland sit there in DOJ and say, uh-oh, you know, this is what, it neutralizes a lot of things. But if the Republicans go after Biden for the documents, they've got their guys sitting there too, you know. So it's not the right thing to go after. I mean, there's no right thing right now, but that's really not the right thing.
Or is it? Is it the perfect thing? Because I was thinking about this today, because my thought process is exactly what you said. If they do go after Biden, it's going to open up Trump, because clearly his taking and holding and withholding documents much worse than, oh, they're in my garage.
Right.
I didn't even know it. Here, take them back. This is a way to go after Biden, make Biden look bad, weaken him and get some revenge, but also a way to neutralize Trump, because maybe the DOJ then goes, okay, now we have to indict him because, well, now it's in the public sphere and it's clearly worse. It's a way to kill two birds with one stone.
Now, you remember that movie where they had the two former presidents? James Garner was one of
them. Yeah.
Jack Lemmon.
Yeah. Love that movie.
You're telling me that they'll parade the two together? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I'm saying that they'll go after Biden in the hopes that the DOJ goes after Trump so that they could get rid of both of them.
But I was just saying about if all of a sudden.
No, I mean, this could be another bad Netflix
after
movie.
Both of them.
This could be another bad Netflix movie. Because these are the writers.
I doubt nothing these days.
Exactly. It seems like these are the writers. it's crazy. Finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on China. You brought up China a minute ago. Evidently, Janet Yellen's going to be meeting with the Chinese vice premier in Switzerland because, hey, we're kicking off Davos this week, today, I guess, right?
Right.
Thoughts on the meeting?
Several things, as we know, going on, the debt ceiling, et cetera. And so Janet Yellen, you know, is going to be deeply involved in that for months until June, until it comes to an explosive head. And right now, she's, you know, the economic kind of pinpoint person, and she is going to meet, which is at a high level, with the deputy premier, from China. And I think this is a kind of a precarious meeting in the sense that, you know, they've got to be careful about, because China, you know, loves to be three or four chess moves ahead of everybody, and that's how they operate. So I think that obviously meeting with them and talking about the world economy, et cetera, is fine, but there's going to have to be a little bit of caution with it, because China's going to push to undo the tariffs, which at this point in time, President Biden hasn't done, you know, from the Trump era, which I think is a smart move. And so meeting with them is fine. I just would assume that Yellen and the White House are going to be on the same page, that this is a slow, you know, cautious process. Now, the one thing I would hate to see, China is angry because of our, you know, so is some of Europe, our quest to, Lord forbid, manufacture our own products, you know. And so they're angry at that. And I think that's one we obviously got to stay very firm and positioned on.
Now, I was going to ask you about this because, you know, I had heard, you know, a podcast of someone going on about how Europe's upset that we're taking their manufacturing, and that how China and Europe are merging and are coming to agreements because you know the rest of the world knows that America's, you know, on the downslide and all this. And I'm going, wrong message. Message is how about we reshore manufacturing? We shore up our ability to produce the things that we need because the pandemic kind of highlighted that need. And not give in and not cave as is expected. You know, I always go back to what Dick Cheney said when he was vice president about, you know, the Democrats caving. He goes, it's what they do. I'm hoping Biden doesn't cave on this.
Right. That's why I said this is precarious, because China is upset about it. Europe's upset about it. And if we've learned anything with the pandemic, it's about our dependency on certain things from the supply chain. Sure, there's going to be some trade, but China does need us. The only problem we've had with China for years, until Trump, you know, went after them, and sincerely went after them, because, you know, a lot of people didn't. They campaign, and then things had changed. But Biden kept that position, too. So Biden has kept, you know, the pressure up on China. And I think it's, I would hope, because of his, you know, working background and his thoughts towards working people. And this is one thing that, again, Yellen has to be very, very cautious. She doesn't get on the other side of the White House when it comes to the manufacturing issue.
No, this is something that, you know, everyone who says bad things about Biden, go, look, at the end of the day, I don't care about the noise. I care about the manufacturing policy.
Yes.
I care about the policies that he's moving, which have been fantastic, transformative. And when in 10 or 15 years, when we look back on the last 2 years, we're going to go, those were good years. He did the right thing at the right moment. So whatever the Republicans do in these next 2 years, because impeachment watch is going on as we speak, because they're going to impeach him for something. You know that. Those 2 years are going to be his legacy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And again, you know, people wondered, because he made a statement during the campaign about lunch, or they weren't as dangerous, something like that. And, you know, that was taken to say, oh, if you elect him, he's going to reverse everything. And I think that he's been, you know, appropriately cautious, and he's, you know, been tough on the issue. And this is the one issue that, you know, he needs to do this, because not just for a political purpose, obviously, but for public policy. I mean, our jobs, you know, people have been fighting this fight for decades, trying to just get some kind of parity. And like I always said, when they said, well, these workers here have to get more productive in America, I'm sorry, but you can't compete against slave labor, you know, which is what China is.
Yep.
Labor, it still is. So I think standing up to them is a good thing. And I would assume, again, that Yellen will, in these meetings, stay on the right side of the White House, because, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen with cabinet officials, but I would assume this one's a big deal and she'll do that.
Yeah, I hope so. Good stuff. I appreciate the time, Bob. As always, good stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I hope they stay the course. Stay the course. It is one of the things that I thought the Trump administration did well, that they did right. The tariffs on China, even though they didn't have a bigger strategy, which we should have had, that was a step in the right direction. I know. How dare you? How dare you give Trump credit for something? No, you got to give credit where credit is due. The other thing is giving labor rights to Mexican workers, fighting for that in NAFTA or the USMCA or whatever they're calling it now. Smart thing to do. Quick break. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1920, and thousands of immigrant detainees and labor activists won the basic constitutional right to consult with an attorney. These detainees were victims of the infamous Palmer raids. A. Mitchell Palmer had been appointed Attorney General by President Woodrow Wilson. Palmer feared that the Russian Revolution would spread to the United States. When a bomb went off at his home, Palmer became convinced of a communist plot to overthrow the American government. He enlisted the help of J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI in his battles against suspected radicals.
Over the course of the next several months, Palmer and Hoover raided labor headquarters and homes in more than 30 cities. They arrested 16,000 suspected communists and anarchists. Many swept up in the raids were arrested without warrant, for nothing more than having a foreign accent. While most were eventually released, 248 people, including Emma Goldman, were deported to Russia. Some of the detainees, including members of the Industrial Workers of the World, were held without counsel. As news of the brutality of the sweep spread, public opinion began to turn against Palmer. Finally, on this day in 1920, the detainees still facing deportation were allowed to meet with attorneys to discuss their cases. A 2013 study found that on any given day in the United States, 34,000 immigrants sit in jails, prisons, and holding facilities awaiting potential deportation. Many, if not most, do not have access to the representation of counsel in these hearings. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. So, George, listening on AM 820 WCPT Chicago, writes, 30 million Americans are subject to non-compete clauses. I listened to your last podcast and wanted to tell you about my story working for a fast food chain here in the Chicago area that had us all sign non-compete agreements and signed forced arbitration agreements. He goes on to tell this story about how, you know, this, and nobody knew any better until the Jimmy John story a couple years ago, how the company had just kind of slid it into the paperwork and nobody knew what they were signing. Everyone signed it. And now that this non-compete issue has come up before the Federal Trade Commission, because what they're talking about doing is banning these entirely. I don't see how they apply to fast food workers. I don't see how, you know, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is proprietary and you can't go across the street and make one. But what they're saying is these non-compete agreements reduce earnings of working people by almost $300 billion a year. And it goes back to what we keep talking about. It's the holding down of wages, the suppression of wages. It's the systematic suppression of workers' ability to get better wages, hours, conditions. You know who doesn't have non-compete agreements? People with union contracts. You know who doesn't sign forced arbitration agreements? People with union contracts. You know, this is one of those moments. I saw a story over at Twitter. So when I get this email, I'm thinking about Twitter. Twitter fires their janitors. The janitors file a class action suit to go to court. The judge says, sorry, you can't file a class action suit. Thank you, Supreme Court. You have to go where? That's right, to an arbitrator, because you signed a forced arbitration clause. You don't have access to the courts. These are janitors. These are freaking janitors who have been forced to sign these forced arbitration clauses, having their rights taken away from them. Now, understand, they don't sign them, they don't get the job. They don't get the job, they don't get to pay the rent. They don't get to pay the rent, they're out in the street. So they sign them because they don't have a choice. And I've been saying for years, this is something that has to be addressed. Is it going to be addressed by our Supreme Court? No, our Supreme Court's horrible. They're the ones who put this as the law of the land. They're the ones who decided, well, these fine, and class action lawsuits. If you're a company and you screw millions of people out of $20 a piece, yeah, that's great. They can't all come together and sue you, so you get away with it. Because who's going to go sue AT&T over a $20 charge? Nobody. But a million people coming together, that's a different story. And this is what our Supreme Court has done to us, has forced us into these legal wranglings that benefit who? Corporate America. Not you, not me, but them. And this is why, again, I keep coming back to the politic of the day and which side working people need to be on. Look at this court, man.
This court's going to do some ugly stuff. We're going to roll back the entire 20th century. We're going to get back to the good old days. Or if you're hungry enough and desperate enough to work for poverty wages and in deplorable conditions, it's your freedom. Get ready for it. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.